Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh, South Dakota Public Broadcasting, and In the Moment continue our series on the future of farming today. We welcome Kevin McNew, Chief Economist for the Farmers Business Network. He's going to take us through the challenges of harvest season, provide an outlook for 2020, and visit about a trade deal with China, or is there a deal in place? Kevin McNew, welcome back to In the Moment. We've got a lot to cover today. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Lori. Thanks for having me back.
Let's start with the 2019 harvest and how it might be affected by snow, cold, precipitation. What do you know?
You're right. I mean, it has been a challenging growing season. You know, we started the spring with one of the wettest springs on history, and South Dakota farmers were kind of right in the bullseye of just bad weather in the spring planting season. So worst planting season in 40 years of data from USDA. And then, you know, we had what was a pretty decent round of weather for much of the growing season. You know, temperatures were hot early, but moderated more so later in the season. And so we thought we were going to coast into harvest with what seemed to be a pretty normal crop, you know, no real hiccups. But then Mother Nature threw a wild card at us, and that was this massive snowstorm and cold front that blew through last week and just really kind of disrupted things. You know, the upper plains obviously hit with fairly significant snowfall at a time when farmers in South Dakota and North Dakota were really just starting to roll those combines out of the fields and start doing some cutting. So we'll see. You know, there's a lot of uncertainty right now around the harvest. The broader part of the grain belt is in pretty good shape, but you know, the upper plains is an area of concern for the U.S. and the market as a whole.
Mm. When do you start seeing the impact of it? When do we know?
You know, we just had a report from USDA last week, and that was based on survey data they did earlier in the month. So we're not going to have a good indication from USDA until we get into November. And then even then, we may not know until they do follow-up surveys in December and January. So it's mm-hmm. going to be quite a bit of uncertainty. You know, there'll be, people like ourselves, FBN, working with our farmers to try and get a sense of what that looks like. But from an official USDA perspective, it may take a couple months before we have a good understanding of just how much of an impact this problem has.
People had some, you know, operators had some difficult decisions to make as far as, you know, during that planting season and what was ahead. Are some of those, just, you know, everything from because of that early, you know, flooding and the spring weather, the difficult spring, to what was happening in international trade at the time. How are we seeing some of those decisions that people made either pay off or not pay off? What if we could go back and give advice to people earlier in the year, knowing what we know now, what would we have told them?
Well, I think, you know, what we told them at the time, which turned out to be the right decision, was, you know, and what USDA signaled was, you know, plant like there's no government program in front of you. And as it turned out, those decisions were the best decisions, because when USDA did announce their market facilitation payments, which were basically, you know, the payments as a result of the trade war, those payments were calculated on a broad swath of commodity acreage, regardless of what you planted. So it turned out that, you know, farmers didn't need to jockey and make planting decisions in June based on MFP payments, because at the end of the day, USDA just said, we're just going to take this wide swath of commodities and make a payment to farmers based on it. So I think in that sense, you know, farmers probably followed that advice, and I think that worked out fairly well. And then, you know, the question now becomes, as we look at the implications of Friday's announced trade deal between U.S. and China, what does the future look like here? So we've got to sort of sort through that.
Before we go there and talk about that, let's those aid packages, those market facilitation payments, were they enough? Did they deliver enough for farmers to? I know that's kind of a weird question, but
yeah, that's a difficult question to answer, and you know, I'm sure everyone's going to have a different opinion on it. You know, what I will tell you is that the farmers we talk to clearly want free trade. You know, they don't want to take a government check, and that was their message all along from the start of this trade war a year ago. Is, you know, we many farmers sort of understood the geopolitics involved in this, but at the end of the day, you know, they're businessmen and women that need to be conscious of their economics, and their economics were collateral damage in this trade war as a result of the U.S.-China trade spat. So farmers needed free trade. They didn't want a government check, and hopefully, you know, we're making steps to get that changed and get that reversed.
Tell us a little bit about whether or not, because we were hearing, you know, when those payments were rolling out, that so many of them are going to large corporate farms and that smaller farmers were getting the crunch. Did you hear that as well?
Well, I think that's always a knock on government payments. You know, they're based on size. They're based on some measure of you know, volume or size, and usually that's acreage. And so, you know, and again, I think, you know, there's kind of a misnomer in farming that corporate farmers are not family farms. Well, that I don't think that's necessarily true. You know, the farmers we deal with, farmers that I've known for all my life and have been involved with, you know, they are big farms. They're family farms, and they're engaged in as corporate entities. They're aligned as corporate entities, but, you know, they're still the bread and butter of rural communities. You know, they still support rural communities. So I think, you know, USDA does the best job they can in trying to allocate payments. And, you know, like I said, there's always going to be those who think those payments should go in a different fashion.
All right, let's talk about trade and access to markets. President Trump was talking about the, quote, very substantial phase one deal. And since then, there's been a lot of uncertainty about what's ahead. Tell me a little bit about how this is starting to unfold and whether or not farmers should be excited or skeptical.
I would say somewhere in between is probably the right mood for farmers to strike at this point. You know, the Friday announcement, you know, was met with euphoria. The markets responded not only in the grain markets, but also in the broader equities with some enthusiasm about this round of deal that it was positive. Both China and U.S. said it was positive. But there's a lot of details. There's a lot of things that need to be worked out in the next 6 weeks before a deal is inked. You know, China has said, for us to buy $40 to $50 billion of U.S. farm products, which was what President Trump announced, you know, U.S. is going to have to roll back its tariffs. You know, they're going to have to eliminate the tariffs on the goods that we have in place. And so, you know, that all these kind of inner workings of the trade deal still have to be sorted out. So, you know, on the one hand, I think it's positive that we finally have some forward movement. You know, I would say farmers should be cautiously optimistic at this point. You know, we need to see, we need to see the details of what volumes of products will be bought. You know, in all likelihood, it's probably going to be soybeans. It's probably going to be pork. It might be ethanol. I doubt that we would see much in terms of corn or wheat buying from China. They have signaled that they are likely going to be buying things that they strategically need as a result. And so those are the products they strategically need. As a result,
President said that some of those purchases were already being made before the trade deal was even signed. Do we see evidence of that? That some of these purchases are starting early?
Yeah, we are seeing some of that. We've seen China step in and buy a fair amount of soybeans here in the last couple of weeks. So, yeah, we've definitely seen some forward movement in that regard. And the market, you know, the grain markets responded favorably. Soybean prices have rallied from around $8.60 a bushel in Chicago. Back in early September, today we're somewhere around $9.40 a bushel. So, you know, we're seeing positive movement as a result of this trade, trade movement.
And that was done with tariffs in place. There was no stay of those tariffs or waiver or anything.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. So in the meantime, you know, as farmers talked about free trade, there were lots of efforts to find those new markets and secure new markets for trade. How has that been going? Have we been seeing movement in that area from a positive sense?
You know, there might be some situations going on, but on a broad scale, I can't say that we're seeing much in terms of new trade opportunities arising. Indeed, when we look at corn in particular, we're facing a very stiff environment for competition. South America, Ukraine, those countries in the last year have really had massive levels of production, and they're aggressively competing in the world market. So Traditionally, we have been able to export into a lot of Asian markets like South Korea, Taiwan, Vietnam. You know, those markets have been hard for us to reach as a result of stiff competition. So, you know, the economics are in play here that we're kind of in a heated battle with our competitors because there is so much grain in the world market right now. And so while farmers I know want to look out their window and say, gee, the corn crop may not look good here. And you know, I'm not sure we're going to have as good a crop as we thought, and the market should be rallying. You know, the market's conscious of that, but also has to recognize that there's plenty of grain in the world market to step up and fill the gap at this point.
All right, so let's look to 2020 then, knowing what we know now. What are some of those the decisions that are being made or considered at this point, and what's the outlook?
Yeah, I think, you know, as always, there's always so much uncertainty. We have, as farmers here are wrapping up or starting to wrap up their harvest season, we're going to turn our attention to South America, you know, a major competitor in world grain, and their growing season is off to a somewhat rocky start because they're facing quite a bit of dryness. So in Brazil in particular, as they're entering the planting season, it's pretty dry down there. It's still early, so I don't want to get too alarmed about it. But, you know, the market's starting to pay a little bit of attention to that dryness. And that kind of has several ramifications. First of all, for soybeans, Brazil, you know, at this time of year will be planting soybeans predominantly. And they're doing it later because they're waiting for some moisture. Now, what that means is because they double crop soybeans with a second season of corn, that if they get the soybean crop planted late, then that likely means they get their second season corn crop planted late as well. And that's bad news because then they really struggle with getting yields on that second season corn crop. So this is kind of an interesting thing to watch, not because, you know, not just because of soybeans, but it potentially could have ramifications for their very important second season corn crop called the safrinha crop.
All right. So how does that affect a farmer in South Dakota making decisions? Help me make that connection.
Right. Yeah. So I think what that means is, you know, right now, obviously we have, you know, the markets are up pretty good. We've got, you know, Chicago markets up around $4. You know, they certainly need to sort of think about old crop and what they're harvesting right now. But as they look to next year, you know, I think there's still some time on the horizon to make some planting decisions. You know, chances are soybeans are probably going to keep moving higher and gaining ground on corn. So where North Dakota, South Dakota farmers, those northern plain states that have moved away from beans in the last year because of the trade war, they may start to see the economics work back in their favor to switch back into beans. So, you know, that's I think that's something that we could see evolve in the next 2 to 3 months as farmers start to make planting decisions. And then also, you know, wheat. There's a really, you know, dire situation, if you will, with protein, with quality wheat in the world market, not just in the U.S., but in Canada as well. So, you know, high protein wheat, like the spring wheats that are grown in the northern plains, those are still going to be kind of a premium play as we get into the 2020 marketing year. So I think, you know, where farmers have really sort of wanted to move into corn in the northern plains, I think, you know, they may see some economics return to growing soybeans and wheat as markets kind of change in the coming months.
Fascinating. What's the problem with wheat worldwide?
Well, there's kind of two problems. One is we have a lot of volume of wheat, in other words, a lot of bushels. But the problem we have is that the quality of that wheat, what's called protein content, and that's what goes into making milling quality wheat, is not very good. And so what happens is when you have a crop that is gets a lot of rain, gets a lot of moisture, well, that's good for production in terms of volume. It is not good for protein. And so millers and companies that need high protein wheat are finding it much scarcer to come by. And so that price for that high quality, that high protein wheat is going up. And again, that's the type of wheat that's grown in the northern plains.
Interesting. All right. So as we do this month-long look at the future of farming in South Dakota, South Dakota Public Broadcasting has been asking a lot of questions about, you know, how to stay in business and, you know, how soil health we've, you know, dive pretty deep into. And we're hearing a lot of this, you know, from Precision Ag, and we'll have a conversation on that here in a moment. But also, you know, no-till and, grazing and, you know, sort of ecologically friendly, soil health friendly practices. Are these economically successful practices as well, short-term and long-term, diversification of what you plant, all those sort of things that go into regenerative ag's category. Help me make sense of that from an economic standpoint.
Right. I think that's an extremely interesting area, and I think it's an avenue that we in agriculture need to keep exploring. I don't have concrete answers to it, Lori, but what I can tell you from the stuff I've looked at is that, you know, the whole nature of regenerative and what we might call sustainable farming. I know some people don't like to use that term, but, right, but the idea is to, you know, really keep using things in an efficient manner, just like, you know, corn versus soybean, you know, that simple rotation. You know, you don't plant corn on corn on corn year on year, year after year, because you need to improve soil health. So nitrogen fixating crops like soybeans add nitrogen back into the soil. So, you know, there's benefits in this kind of way of thinking. So it's not just monoculture types of production of agriculture. And so, again, I don't have strong data to support it, but I know the stuff we've looked at FBN and stuff we've looked at from an economic standpoint suggests that farmers need to look at all possibilities. Sustainable farming is, you know, I think just a valuable way to try and explore these other opportunities to add value back to your farm.
Yeah. Are you finding a better word than, because I've had the same problem with those, you know, sustainable, regenerative, conventional. Nobody really likes those words, but I haven't had anyone tell me what they prefer. I just think
I'm not a marketing expert. Yeah. Somebody needs to put a better spin on that, but you're right.
All right. Kevin McNew, anything else that you wanted to say about the outlook here before I let you get back to work?
No, I think we covered it, Lori. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Thanks so much for being here.
You bet.